Well, hey, everyone. Here we are for this week's culture segment. It's always fun when we can introduce you to a new person here at The Boundless Show. We generally do that through our culture segment because we always enjoy seeing the different topics that we can bring up here at The Boundless Show. Today, we are talking to Jeff Mannion. Hey, Jeff.
Good to see you, Lisa.
Great for you to be here. Jeff is senior teaching pastor of Ada Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he has been basically forever by pastor terms, over 30 years.
32 years.
32 years. And you actually reflect in the book on starting, what was it, like in a double garage or something? It was some weirdo
situation.
Yeah,
it was a house that they would later turn, church building that they would later turn into a house, but it was your basic ranch house, and worship space was the width of a two-stall garage.
Yeah.
25 people, and Chris and I were just married and 21 years old, and the church is without a pastor, and they invited us to come in, and they asked me to preach until they found a real pastor.
Wow.
And they're still looking.
And isn't it true? Well, you know, you need to not look in winter because up in Michigan, no one wants to go there. So
that's right.
You need to only do pastor searches in the middle of summer because then it's pretty.
Absolutely.
But so the question is, isn't that like a very small percentage of pastors that actually start with their first church and stick with it that long?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know the numbers, but it's pretty rare.
You don't sit around doing research on that.
Yeah, it's pretty rare.
You're more concentrated on actually preaching and like leading the church. That's good.
But it's not the same church. It's
no.
It's probably changed, you know, three or four times, you know, not only buildings, but as you change size, 50 is nothing like 500, and 500 is different than, you know, multi-campus. And so
very true. Yeah, you've actually moved to kind of multi-site at this point. I know, what, like three different sites?
Three campuses,
okay. All right. Well, when Jeff is not preaching and teaching and speaking and all that, he's also an author, and he has written the book, The Land Between, Finding God in Difficult Transitions, which is what we're going to talk about today because, hello, I know some of you just pulled out a pencil because this is very applicable to us who are young adults going through transition and in any number of areas of our lives. So you actually kick off the book, Jeff, telling the story of losing your mom at a very young age in a car accident.
Yep.
And so talk about, you know, kicking off life with a major life transition. And I think, you know, life transitions can be good too, but I think largely, you know, examples that we use, and the book itself actually tracks the Israelites through their wilderness experience coming out of Egypt, and that's what you use kind of as the basis of telling this. But can you start off by telling us, you know, that was kind of your first land between, so to speak. Describe how that prepared you for any future life interruptions. Because no kid is just sitting there going, well, you know, thank the Lord that I'm really going to learn through this and be able to mature in this.
It was my seventh grade year. My dad was a pastor, five children. My sister was 13. I was 12. Younger brothers, 9, 4, and 2-month-old baby that lived through the accident that killed my mom. But basically, you awaken one morning to the news, you know, there's been an accident, and everything in life changes. And there was a cross-country move from Idaho, where my dad pastored, to Michigan. And my dad married a much younger woman. She was 21 at the time. Carolyn's one of the most gracious people you would ever meet, but she had to adjust to becoming a mom of five children. And so Grand Rapids, Michigan for 2 years, and then moved to Northern California. And so you go from this stable situation of, you know, grade school, everything being the same in this small potato country, southeast Idaho. And then one funeral, one wedding, and two cross-country moves later, everything's tipped upside down and changed. And yet, I think that that disruption that God was preparing my heart as a young 21-year-old pastor, just to be able to shepherd, pastor, and coach people who have situations thrust upon them that they did not desire and did not ask for. You know, you think the relationship is moving toward engagement and you're sitting down to dinner one evening and he's nervous and you think he's going to ask me. And then he says, what would you think if we dated other people? Which means he already has, you know. And suddenly you move from this pre-engagement to you know, single once again without the relationship that you had, graduating from college and not being able to find a career that matches, you know, your field of study that you've invested in for 4, 5, or 6 years, or a company upheaval where you just get called into an office one day and it's like, we're restructuring, your position no longer exists. And so, Lisa, I've just spent an incredible amount of time asking the question, what does God plan for us during these awful times when we go, I don't like this space, I don't want this space, I don't understand this space, and how God might be pleased to use what, you know, what I call the land between.
Yeah. Well, and Jeff, talk to us a little bit. I mean, I think if we all had the opportunity, and young adults fall into this trap too, we would love to just sit down and create a business plan for our life and chart out our 10-year, 20-year success plan, make everything happen, mitigate all the risk and all the loss. But the fact is that the Bible tells us that we will experience hardship. So why in the world are we always, as believers, even those who consider themselves somewhat mature believers, why are we always surprised by the bumps in the road? Why do we always, whether it's cancer or loss of a family member or a job, you know, loss or financial hardship, we're always like, what? What's God doing? Why? You know, it reminds me of the Israelites, actually.
Yeah. I think that if someone's raised in Sunday school, I think that our teachers unintentionally set us up for a fall in repeating the stories of David and Goliath, Daniel in the lion's den, the Israelites at the Red Sea, and the lesson of the story always seemed to be the same: when you're in trouble, trust God, and He will get you out.
Yeah. Well, everyone in those flannel graphs looks happy.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah. And the truth of the matter is, you know, read Scripture as it presents itself, and you have you know, the Israelites for 40 years in the desert, a space that they do not want to be in. The Apostle Paul beaten up more than a few times. John the Baptist gets beheaded. The Bible from cover to cover is a journey of trust where it's not going well much of the time. And God is saying, listen, I want you to trust me in the middle of this mess. I think that that is not something that's necessarily taught in our younger years. And quite frankly, when someone comes to a major life crisis, many people abandon their faith. They go, this isn't working like it's supposed to work. And yet I think a true reading of Scripture allows you, it really is.
Yeah. You know? Well, and ironically, a lot of Christians seem to, when they encounter hardship or even a smaller bump in the road, many of us choose to turn from, like you said, we choose to turn from God, or we think God doesn't care, or we think that we need to go solve some things off on the side on our own. But you actually have a section of the book where you talk about the value of talking to God in these situations. Using, I mean, the Psalms being a great example and what David did. What is a good way, if you were to counsel a young adult, Jeff, in this, what's a good way to talk to God when we're frustrated? What's a productive way? Or non-productive. I mean, maybe we start out non-productive.
Well, I think non-productive is to remain silent and to say nothing and to stew. But the Psalms of Lament, and I do talk about several of those in the book, you see King David more than willing to just open his heart and say, this is not working. Psalm 55, oh, that I had the wings of a dove, I would fly away. I would just get out of here. Psalm 69 is the song of a drowning man. The water's up to my neck. I'm slipping. He says, I am hoarse, crying out for help. And this is like a guy going under, scanning shore for a lifeguard, and there is nobody there. And then the psalm just where he says, how long? How long, O Lord, will you reject me forever? How long will my enemy triumph over me? How long will I wrestle with my thoughts? It's asked 4 times in 2 verses. And the prayer is basically, how come I keep praying and how come you keep not doing anything? And so there was this brutal honesty in the Psalms of Lament. And yet, at least it's not a hit and run. It's not a drive-by at God. These Psalms, like Psalm 13 and Psalm 55 and Psalm 69, they end with hope. And it's like, yet I will trust in you, yet I will wait. Psalm 69 ends, do not let me drown. And so it's the ability to face God. It's the ability to pour out what is actually happening in all its brutal ugliness. Maybe asking him why he's not present when you think he's supposed to be. But then instead of turning your back and walking away, remaining there with your hands open. I think we empty our hands in this lament, and I think we keep our hands open to receive what he would be pleased to speak back into our lives. But I believe it's healthy. And these people that did this, I mean, Moses, where he says, if this is how you're going to treat me, just kill me. Mm-hmm. And he says, I can't carry this anymore. Mm-hmm. Jeremiah had a famous meltdown. I think it's in Jeremiah 20 or 21. Elijah mm-hmm. asked just to die. Mm-hmm. These are not spiritual lightweights. Mm-hmm. These are some of the heroes of the faith. Mm-hmm. Who just reached points of fatigue where, honest to God, they said, I can't do this, and I don't feel like you're keeping your end of the bargain. Hmm. And often God met them in that naked, vulnerable space.
Mm-hmm. And it seems, too, you know, this is just from conversations with my friends and people I know through church and stuff, that God isn't necessarily the way we would see it, quote unquote, fair in the way he meets out life circumstances. So as you have counseled folks over the years, how do you sit down with a person who is just constantly slammed, who has lost things, who has been, yeah, I mean, there are people going through death, abuse, I mean, yeah. things, repeated things, and then they look at their fellow church members who seem to be coasting through. What is your encouragement for that person who just feels like, God, you know, when are you going to let up?
And by the way, it's a comparison, isn't it, that,
yeah.
that kills?
Oh, sure.
It's wrestling with infertility for 3 years, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. then someone in your Sunday school class or small group, they're pregnant again. Mm-hmm.
I could sit in the pew of my church and think of 10 things that the people in that same pew have better than me, you
yeah.
know? I mean,
yeah.
I could spend the whole announcement time stewing over that, so.
Well, I would say be slow to speak. When someone's going through something just incredibly tragic, the unfaithfulness of a spouse, mm-hmm. an engagement that breaks up, close to the wedding, mm-hmm. A miscarriage after a long-awaited pregnancy, often that person needs love. They need mercy. They also need to be reminded that God is faithful. Mm-hmm. And as dark as it is, they just need someone to speak words of hope. There will come a day when you will laugh again. Mm-hmm. I know you don't see it. I know it's not going to be tomorrow. They need people to be hopeful for them. And I think a consistent, faithful person in their life to listen, not to coddle, but to encourage and to remind them of God's faithfulness over time is powerful. But as the listener, as the coach, we can't expect these things to turn on a dime. Mm-hmm. I mean, grief, there's no such thing as a drive-through window for grief, you mm-hmm. know, where you pay your dues and then travel on. Mm-hmm. Grief, you think you're over the worst of it, and then you get sideswiped one day when you think you see them in a mall or you see a car that looked like theirs, or mm-hmm. And it comes back. And so I think that consistency, faithfulness to a friend, mm-hmm. and also a reminder that God is good, I think these can be powerful things.
Yeah, that's good. I know when I, you know, years ago, I lost my dad to cancer and at the same time was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, which mm-hmm. our audience knows. And I remember just looking around me. I mean, here I was in my late 20s and I was like, no one in my peer group had experienced that.
Yeah.
And so it was very helpful to me, one, to be in a church body that was multi-generational, that
yeah.
had, because I went to the old ladies because they had arthritis.
Wow.
And I went to the older people in our church had lost spouses and had lost. And so it was actually a great entree for me to really begin being invested in by some of the people in our church who,
you know, particularly, there's something so powerful there, particularly those who had been through a season of pain.
Mm-hmm.
There's that passage in 2 Corinthians where Paul says, praise be to the God of all, like the Father of all compassion, the God of all comfort. And then he says, who comforts us in all of our trials. But then he says, so that we may comfort others. Mm-hmm. with the very comfort we ourselves have received from God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for someone passing through a very challenging time in their life, one of these land between undesired transition spaces, the ability to say, okay, if I become a person of trust during this time, it's not just me.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to encounter people through the years who have messes of all kinds. And if we find God faithful in this situation and we're faithful in our journey, God, please use this for us to be able to coach others and encourage others in theirs. So the fact that you'd be able to go, you know, to older, you know, to widows in your congregation mm-hmm. or older folks who were struggling with arthritis, and if they journey through that well, mm-hmm. not with a spirit of complaint, but with a spirit of trust, in a spirit of hope, the way that they grew through their pain helps you grow through yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let's kind of break it down here for the person. I'm just thinking of an example. Say I have a friend who, you know, because we talk a lot about relationships here yeah. at the Boundless Show. I have a friend who was interested in a guy for years, hung on to a relationship that ended up never coming to fruition. Yeah. She thought there was more to it than there was. So she grieved that sure. relationship for a long time. She knew she had to break it off because it was unhealthy.
Yeah.
So she did. And she'll tell me, she said, Lisa, I thought for sure that God was going to reward me
yep.
for doing that by giving me this great guy. And she's still single. What do you say, Jeff, you know, whether to my friend, these people that are in situations where we never seem to get out of the in-between. Maybe we have wrestled with singleness for 10, 15 years now. We're still single. Maybe we have been praying for an unsaved family member our entire life and we're not seeing an answer. I mean, it's easy for me, you know, say I too have been through breakups, people. And I can look back on them now and know that I came out of that season and there was joy and beauty from ashes and all this kind of stuff. But there are some people that are still in it and it's years and years and years. Is there, where is that light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, let me say something that's hard to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And in personal conversation, I mean, in interview format, I can say this to you. I don't think I would say it to someone who's just been broken up with.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'd be much more cautious and careful
sure.
and judicious with my words. But I think the question that we're always asking in the land between is, how can I get out of this space?
Mm-hmm.
Someone in 2010, the house that refused to sell, the 16th month of unemployment, the fifth year of infertility, the second relationship that broke up after 3 years of mm-hmm. dating, we're thinking, how can I get out of this space?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a natural question and it's a normal question. I think the more mature question over time is, what does God want to do with this space?
Mm-hmm.
And it's when we get past the why and we get into the what now.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Israelites in the wilderness, which is just a beautiful picture of being in this between space, because they've been slavery for Egypt for generations and they're waiting to get into the promised land. And here they are stuck in the stinking desert, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet what they're in there, where they're really in trust school.
Hmm.
And when they leave Egypt, you know, Moses, let my people go. You know, they follow him out into the desert. They are not ready to enter the land of promise as God's people. They exit Egypt. They exit Egypt as an unruly mob of ex-slaves indoctrinated in generations of Egyptian idol worship. They don't know the singular, invisible Creator God, and they don't trust Him. And so what's happening when they go without water for 3 days, when they're going without food, when the chariots are attacking them at the Red Sea, is God is saying, I want you to trust me. I want you to trust me when you're under attack. I want you to trust me when you run out of food. I want you to trust me when you're eating this manna stuff for the second year in a row. And I think one of the most powerful prayers that we can offer is just, God, I don't like this space. I don't want this space. I don't understand this space, but I will trust you in this space.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see so often, Lisa, is just that the soil that we despise grows the spiritual fruit that we most desperately need.
Mm-hmm.
And it can become a greenhouse for spiritual growth,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't make it any more mm-hmm. enjoyable to live through.
Mm-hmm.
It's awful space, but God can do some wonderful things in it.
Hmm. So true. Well, Jeff, this has been fantastic. Again, folks, the book is The Land Between, Finding God in Difficult Transitions. I know you are out there because you write to us. Those of you who are still waiting on a job, you are still waiting on a relationship, on marriage, you're waiting for a broken relationship with your parents to be healed. Grab a copy of this book. If you know someone who's walking through a hard transition, grab this for them. And do join us in the conversation over on the blog. Share your story. I know it will encourage others. So, Jeff, thanks so much for being here.
Lisa, great to talk today.